This episode of the Disney Nerds Podcast is brought to you by DVC Resale Market. DVC Resale Market has become the leader in the DVC resale industry. They have sold over $400 million in DVC Vacation Club and have over 100 years of combined direct DVC experience. If you're looking to buy or sell, DVC Resale Market wants to put their knowledge and world-class service to work for you. Contact our friend Nick Cotton over at DVC Resale Market at www.dvcresalemarket.com.
Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the Magic Worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome back to the Disney Nerds Podcast. I'm Sam from Sam's Disney Diary. We have a very special guest today, but before we get to that, Jimmy, how's it going, my man? What's new?
I am fantastic and just counting down the days till my next trip to Walt Disney World.
Isn't that what we all do when we get back? I just got back and I'm counting them down for my next trip. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I'm lucky enough to, I feel like I almost always have a countdown.
Yeah, that's a great thing. But you know what? Sometimes we look for that. What can we do to connect to Disney history, maybe outside of the parks? What's happening? And you know, they say it started with a mouse. Did it start in Chicago? I say the connection's in Marceline. So we have a very special guest with us today, Peter Whitehead, who is the creative director for the Walt Disney Hometown Museum in Marceline, Missouri. Peter, thank you for joining us.
I'm so excited to be here and chat Disney and chat Marceline.
So in what order does that come? Is it Marceline? Is it Disney? I mean, we all know the story. We walk down Main Street, USA, and it's supposed to be Walt's memories of a turn-of-the-century town. How close are we?
Yeah, I love that he is our biggest advocate. I mean, Walt... Literally, Walt was so enamored with the city, he utilized it in a number of ways. But I think, you know, the company line is Main Street is based off of Walt's memories of Marceline. I would say to you that any Imagineer who was lucky enough to be part of that design project would have brought a bit of their own hometown to those buildings and the facade and the color scheme and all that fun stuff. I would, if I had the ability to do that, for sure. So, but I think of it as a palate cleanser. I think when Walt knew you were about to step into a park that would be literally sensory overload, he wanted you to take a minute, take a deep breath, relax, familiarize yourself in a place that you might not know, but feels like you might know. And for Walt, that moment in his life was for sure Marceline when he was a young boy. And I think he wanted everyone to experience what he experienced. And there are undeniably connections between Main Street and Marceline.
But we by no means it's a recreation. It's not even close. It's memories.
No, it's not. It is for sure memories. It's memories and it's moments. And it's things like the Opera House. When you go to see Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln and you turn and you see an opera house, well, why isn't it a theater, for instance, which would make sense to call it perhaps a theater? But he grew up in Marceline, and Marceline, being a division point on the Santa Fe Railroad, was pretty advanced for its time, and we had an opera house. So Walt, when he went to see a live stage play, he went to an opera house. So I love that that's what that became, not just a theater. So there's all sorts of moments. Coke Corner, there's obviously the Hotel Marceline, which reflects the Allen Hotel's facade, which is in Main Street in Marceline. So there are moments that if you have been to Marceline, you will probably look at a building and think, geez, I I think I've seen that somewhere before, and it's a much more stylized version of it for sure. But there are links that are undeniable.
So it's a nostalgic memory portrayed on Main Street and Disneyland and Walt Disney World, and not a recreation.
No, it's not a recreation for sure. It is nostalgia at its best. Walt was in Marceline at a unique period in his life. It was the only time that he got to be a child in many ways. As soon as he left Marceline, he worked and probably worked every day for the rest of his life. He started selling newspapers in Kansas City. So the last sort of moments of Walt just being a child and playing and having fun were in Marceline. So I think no one's life growing up was as idyllic as everyone remembers it to be. So if Walt's going to take memories that would enhance his childhood, they would be derived from Marceline. Absolutely.
I've never had the chance to make it out to Disneyland. But I go to Walt Disney World often, and I've had the chance to take the Marceline, the Magic Kingdom tour, like three times. Yep. I think I've taken it, because I did it once. And then every time I'd go back to Walt Disney World and I'd go with other people, I'm like, you really want to do this tour, because that's what that tour is all about, is, you know, why everything is the way it is on Main Street and what, you know, the stories of what inspired it.
Have you done that
to a degree,
by any chance, Peter? To a degree, yeah.
I have. Okay. I have. It was fun and infuriating all at the same time.
I can imagine. There's some storytelling going on, right?
Yeah, well, there is, and also missed opportunities in many ways. So I was told to not tell our tour guide who I was or where I was from. So I was just
Peter
sitting in the back listening. Yeah.
That's great.
And there were just lots of missed opportunities. There are some connections that they brought up. They only talked vaguely about the railway history. They talked a little bit at the theater when I went through. But then we seemed to just walk away from Marceline altogether when we left Main Street. And they were having a tougher time drawing back other of history. And some of them are not direct, and some of them are more esoteric, and you have to kind of think about the connection. But when I walk through that park, everything from the horse-drawn carriage in front of the Haunted Mansion, I have a recording that I play at my presentations, and Walt talks about he and Roy having a summer job cleaning horse-drawn hearses at Hutchison Furniture and Undertaking in Marceline, of all places. And so I love that horse-drawn carriage or hearse is in front of the Haunted Mansion. And when I drive, or if you walk by It's a Small World, for instance, in Disneyland, It's a Small World gave Marceline an incredible gift, because Walt had to remove a ride called Midget Autopia to make room to expand the walkway to get to It's a Small World. And instead of just getting rid of it, he gave it to the city of Marceline. It was the only ride that left a Disney-controlled park and maintained operation without Disney's control. And that's all a gift from Walt and Roy directly through his private company, Retlaw. So they don't talk about things like that. And I walk through thinking, why aren't you talking about that?
Yeah.
That's a cool connection. Like, if you want to really share history and things that people don't know, there's lots of little bits that we could still add to that tour. So I made lists, and we sat down afterwards, and I thought, talk about this. And they're just looking at you with, you know, puzzled eyes. Are you really from Marceline?
From Marceline?
Exactly.
So the Junior Autotopia, that was for maybe 3 to 8 year olds. Is that kind of where it was targeted? If I remember
it
right.
Was, so, yeah, it's Midget Autopia. There was
Midget
a Junior Autotopia.
Okay.
And
there were three of them.
Autopia. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it was not designed by Disney. It was just a ride that was purchased. And you're right, it is just for kids. It's on a set track. It's an electric ride. Operators pushed it into the one of four segments that they could control to turn the power off so cars didn't hit each other if something terrible happened. But it was a ride that was easy to remove from the park because, of course, everyone knows Walt's mandate was go to the park and have fun with your kids. Don't go and watch your kids have fun.
Right.
This was a ride where adults could not get in the car. So it was one of those watch your kids have fun moments, which I think was not, it did not make him particularly enamored with that specific ride. So we were the benefactors of his decision to remove it.
And you said that, that ride was made by somebody else, you said?
Yeah, it was made by Arrow Motorworks, of all places. And Arrow has a long history with Disney. They sort of co-designed a bunch of rides and pieces together. Disney at one point owned some of Arrow Motorworks because they did so much work together. But it was literally a purchased ride. There were eight, I believe, scattered all over North America. Disneyland was just one of many that had that specific ride. So when we talk about cars, a lot of people think they have Midget Autopia in their collection, and quite possibly they do not. Almost assuredly, they do not. I only know of two other collectors who have really verified Midget Autopia cars. So,
do you have a car in the museum? I think I read something about that.
We do. We have a parts car that came from California. So when I think it was 10 cars, there was some talk whether it was 10 or 12 cars. But there was a parts car that was used. It was basically cannibalized to keep the other ones running.
Sure.
So visually from the outside, it looks as pristine as the day that it came off the track in California, which is really great for us. And the museum is also, we have three other shells. So fiberglass shells. One of them was from Disneyland of all places. So when you went through the Autopia ride, maybe halfway through it, there was a bronze Midget Autopia car up on a pedestal.
Okay.
And that car was quote unquote loaned to Disneyland quite a few years ago from Marceline. And then Disney for a time forgot that it was a loan, and they just bronzed it and put it up on a pedestal until we asked for it back. Which was 2 years ago, I think we got that back. So it's lovely that they finally understood the history of it and returned it to us. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a great relationship with Disney.
And we'll talk about that in just a second. If we kind of step back a second, we talk about Walt, you know, he was born in Chicago, moved to Marceline. He was around 5 years old. Is that about how old he was when he showed up in Marceline?
Yeah, he came in 1906.
Okay, and he was born 1901. Forge
late 1901.
Changed the one to a zero so he'd get into World War One, but that's a whole other story.
That's right.
But so he was there essentially through when he was a child. So these 70 trains a day is what I think you were quoted as saying. There were trains running through here constantly, and this could be, you know, the start of his love affair with trains. How can it not
be? Yeah, almost assuredly. So his uncle, Mike Martin, was a conductor on the Santa Fe. And story goes that Mike would come in past so the Disney's home is almost a mile outside of the physical train station in Marceline, which is home to the museum now. And when he would come in on the train, he would toot his whistle in a very specific pattern. And if Walt heard it and could run to the tracks fast enough, Mike would slow down, pick up Walt, and they would go the last mile into Marceline together. So,
oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, he was quite I think he truly did fall in love with trains in Marceline. They came from Chicago to Marceline in a train, so that would have been almost assuredly his first ride on a train. But it's you can't get away from trains in Marceline. We only exist because of the Santa Fe. So not only would there be nothing but engineers or track or train workers living in and around Marceline, but I would think that at the time there might have been far more than 70 going through Marshalling.
That's just an amazing amount of traffic going through there. And yeah, we've talked about on the show before, right? I look at Disneyland and I say, that's Walt's train set. It's really what it is. He's got the train goes around the outside and he changes the pieces in the middle, just like I used to when I was a kid. It's his life-size train set. And that all traces back to Marceline, which is maybe why he always had such an admiration for Marceline.
Yeah.
One of many.
And he rode in on the E.P. Ripley when he opened up Disneyland. And the E.P. Ripley, I mean, our park in Marceline is E.P. Ripley Park, which, of course, was named after one of the, I think it was the chairman of the Santa Fe at the time. So when Disneyland opened, it was the Disneyland and Santa Fe Railroad. And yep, if you worked on the Santa Fe, you would get into Disneyland for free. And when Walt was alive, if you could prove that you lived in Marceline, you also got admission to Disneyland for free.
That's
great. A lot of people don't know that.
That's right.
I had no idea.
Yeah. A lot of people still try it.
I don't think it works today, does it?
Yeah. Bob Iger's having none of that.
It doesn't, although I will tell you, somebody that I was talking to just last week talked about going to Disneyland, and that might have been 10 years ago. And he essentially, because he was wearing a Marceline shirt, got free fast passes for all intents and purposes. Because whenever he was standing in line, if someone engaged him in conversation and found out he was from Marceline, they would escort him to the front of the line. So there are still privileges, I guess.
There's some privileges. That's good stuff. So now when you think Marceline, and you know, I'm thinking this hometown museum, and that's what you're taking care of there. But when we hit your website, which by the way, waltdisneymuseum.org, there's a Disney collection, there's a railroad collection, and when it comes to the city itself, there's Marceline attractions, there's railroad attractions, there's Disney attractions. There's a lot going on here, and I think Walt's kind of at the heart of most of this, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. So we are called the Hometown Museum. Obviously, there's a family museum created by Diane in San Francisco. And I would say a majority of the people that wander and make the pilgrimage to Marceline, their first comment is this technically should be called a family museum, because we don't tell a corporate story. We do stress a family story, and we try to stay pretty specific to Marceline. There's a lot happening in Marceline. There's a lot of stories to be told, so we can fill 10,000 square feet with almost purely Marceline stories. It's easy to do, and our museum exists because of the Disney family. That literally is the only reason we exist. So it's almost imperative that we do that.
So when you presented at the D23 Expo, you talked about Walt and Ruth and sort of their connection. That's his sister, clearly. Why is the museum where it is? What was the connection there?
Well, the museum exists in Marceline. Walt and Roy and Ruth by far spent the most time in Marceline. The oldest boys, Herbert and Raymond, they all moved from Chicago, mostly because they moved out of Chicago because Herbert and Raymond were, according to their mother, running with the wrong crowd. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what mischief they got into in Chicago, but Flora thought it was incredibly important for them to get to a small community where they could keep their eyes on their kids. And at the time they moved, Herbert and Raymond were old enough that they could have stayed if they wanted to. But Elias said that they were going to start a farm, and if they came and worked on the farm, that they would all share the proceeds of the farm. That only lasted a year because Elias, being a frugal man, at the end of the year told Herbert and Raymond that he was going to keep their share of the profits to pay for room and board. So Herbert and Raymond left. They jumped on a freight car and went into Kansas City, I believe. That left Walt and Roy and Ruth spending a bulk of their time together in Marceline, which is why I think they have a greater connection to Marceline for sure. And Ruth, as you can imagine, had collected over her lifetime some pretty amazing letters, family correspondence, and memorabilia to celebrate these two brothers who were incredibly close to her. And when she passed away in 1995, she had become quite good friends with our executive director, Kay Mallins, to the point where she had started apparently a room in her house in Portland that she called Kay's Room. And she would put things in there that she thought were important to help tell the Disney's story in Marceline. And when she passed away, her son, Ted, called Kay and said, "You literally have to come out to Portland and clean out your room because we're going to sell the house." So she went out there with an empty suitcase and ended up coming back with a U-Haul truck full of 4,000 artifacts that tell the Disney story in Marceline. So
incredible.
It literally every day I go in the morning and unlock the door and turn off the alarms and set things up for guests. And I am every day fulfilling a promise that we made to Ruth Disney to tell that story in Marceline.
And that makes so much sense about the older two brothers that you don't really hear a lot about them. I mean, if you read a biography, they'll probably be mentioned in passing, but obviously, you know, as far as Walt's concerned, he grew up more with Roy and Ruth, and that's who he was really close with.
Yeah, very much so. Although I think the family were pretty close as a family. I understand Herbert was on many occasions invited to join the company and just did not want to be living that lifestyle. He was a postal worker living in Portland, and he was very content to just do that and didn't want to work for the Disney studios. And Rand sold insurance, and he sold primarily on the Disney studio lot. So he did quite well for himself, because I think you'd be hard pressed to say no to your boss's brother when he came to up your life insurance policy. So I think the family was pretty close, though. But Herbert and Raymond literally were the reasons that the family left and came to Marceline, and Ruth is the reason the story is still told. So three family members are a big part of this story.
It's fascinating to me that you don't hear a lot about Ruth, right? Because she wasn't in the spotlight in the company, but she was keeping all these interesting things behind the scenes and essentially curating for your museum, which is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. We have some really amazing pieces in our museum. We have these two Mickey dolls. They're the things that I would steal if I was ever to leave the museum. they were gifts to their parents. Walt and Roy gave little Mickey dolls to Flora and Elias in their 50th anniversary party. And so they're in our museum. We have a recording at that same 50th anniversary. Walt brought studio recording equipment, and he interviewed his parents. He printed three records. One went to Roy. Walt kept one. His parents were gifted one. And then when his parents passed away, Ruth took that record. And then that's one of the things she gifted to us. So in one of our gallery spaces on the first floor, you can hear Walt interviewing his parents about history growing up. It's the only place I've ever heard it. So we have some treasures in our museum.
That's fascinating. Wow.
Let me ask you a question about the museum. How long is a day at the museum? Like let's say for the average person, how long can they spend at the museum? And then also like for the Disney nerd, like me and Sam, who's probably going to take a little more time
and
than the average, and all of our listeners, you know, probably going to take a little more time than the average casual Disney fan.
If you came in there and that's not true. But if a couple comes and one of them is debating whether they want to come through the museum or not, and the other one is doesn't care if he ever sees his partner again because he's going into the museum, the person who is pretty disinterested almost assuredly will spend a couple hours wandering through the museum and come out just struck by the amount of pieces that they did not expect to see. If you're a true Disney passionate fan, Jimmy or Sam, you will come when we open at 10 o'clock. This happens a lot. and wander through until lunchtime, and then you'll wander down to Main Street and grab something to eat and then come back to the museum. You can easily spend a full day in the museum. There is so much to read, family letters that are out, correspondence, that you can passively walk through our museum. It's a self-guided tour. We have 9 story stations. So if you did nothing but go to story stations, push a button and hear and see a tale shared by someone who almost assuredly knew the Disney family, you're going to be there for the better part of an hour just listening and walking through and just touching story stations. So the way that we interpret our story now, it enables you, or it begs you to sit down and engage far more than passively you would just walk through a museum quickly. But it really does vary. And if you're a Disney geek, boy, you're going to be in our museum for a long, long time. And luckily we have more and more Airbnbs as our numbers increase that are seeing that, yeah, tourism is a really important, you know, player in Marceline all of a sudden. So it's nice that people who do want to spend a weekend in Marceline can do that far more easily than they've ever been able to do before.
Well, and it's much more than the museum that you're talking about, that you're the creative director for, is in the old train station. But along those lines, you have the Walt Disney Family Museum. Then if I go through all of the things happening and Disney attractions in Marceline, there's the farm, the dreaming tree, the barn. It just goes on and on. There's a lot of things happening outside of the museum.
Yeah, there is. So I think that at some point, if we look into a long-range plan of what could possibly happen in Marceline, the farm is privately owned. The physical farmhouse is not open to tour. But the interesting thing to know about the farmhouse, if you come to Marceline, when you leave, we give you a map of things to visit that are part of our Disney story. So you can go to the municipal park where the pool went in 56 and where the original Midget Autopia track was laid. You can go to the Walt Disney Elementary School that was opened in 1960. If you happen to be peeking through the front windows to look at this beautiful Bob Moore artwork on the back of the wall, if a teacher sees you, it's pretty standard practice to invite you in to see the rest of the art that's scattered throughout the school.
And that's artwork but that Disney artists did inside the school. That's
it did. Cool. Yes. Cool. So for the first, I believe maybe the first half dozen Walt Disney Elementary Schools that opened up, Bob Moore created artwork that was installed in all those schools. So they're similar from school to school. But I think Walt didn't attend every grand opening of a Walt Disney Elementary. He most certainly came to Marceline's in 1960 and brought playground equipment. And I believe that might have come from Holiday Land in Disneyland. So I've heard that from a couple of different Disney employees that said, boy, that stuff looks like the stuff that was in California when we first opened up. So Holiday Land was this little extension to Disneyland where you could go and picnic before you go into the park. And it had playground equipment that was specifically designed with Disney motifs. And it magically appeared in Marceline in 1960. So, but the thing about the farm is, although you can't get into the house, and the house is certainly being changed over time, the current family that lives there obviously needed to modernize it for an ever-growing family. But they were smart enough that if you happen to come in along Highway 5 and know where the house is and are standing beside Highway 5 looking at the house, there's a two-story section, and it goes off to a story and a half to the right. Literally inside the two-story section is Walt's 1910 home. They didn't touch it. So they built around the original house and then put their extension on. So they literally, if you're lucky enough to ever have an opportunity to get into that house, you can go visit Walt and Roy's bedroom. They shared a bedroom and it hasn't changed since 1910. So whenever I go up into that room, it's pretty emotional for me just because I'm a bit of a geek. So I, you know, touch all the door frames and think, well, and undoubtedly Walt touched this as a child. This isn't a fantasy, and it hasn't changed one bit since. They replaced the siding 2 years ago, and when they took off the red siding, the original white clapboard is still buried underneath it. That's yeah. Cool. And the roof line isn't within the roof line. It's so at some point in the future, and it might be quite a ways down the future, we hope that that farm will revert back to what Walt wanted to do at one point in the late 50s, early 60s, was to build a working turn of the century farm attraction there. The Disney company at one point, well, Retlaw, had 300 acres at disposal in Marceline, and they were preparing to build not necessarily a theme park, but an attraction in Marceline. And so we'd like to bring that back to some degree. It just doesn't exist now. You can park, you can walk to the barn, you can see the Dreaming Tree site. You're invited to sign the inside of Walt's barn, which I think is spectacular. I could spend an hour just in that barn looking at signatures, because there's some pretty impressive signatures from Disney artists.
The Dreaming Tree site, how close is this to the museum? The Dreaming Tree site and the barn, or is this a drive?
It is a drive, just because people drive everywhere. But Marceline, you can get across town in, 5 minutes. So you can drive from the museum to the farm in probably less than 5 minutes.
Okay.
So it's a pretty common stop, either on the way in, or savvy people who have looked it up ahead of time will sometimes hit it in the morning before the museum opens if they're looking for something to do. But it's pretty close. So I can see a moment in time in the future where there's a little shuttle bus that takes people on a round trip from the museum to the house. And at some point, we'll open up the house in the future, and you'll be able to walk through Walt's 1910 home and see Walt's bedroom and Ruth and Flora and Elias's bedroom, and then go up to an interpretive center that talks about early farming practices. Everything that Walt wanted to do, I would love to do. But just in a smaller version. But he had dreams that I want to fulfill.
I get it. And by the way, I wanted to mention, you mentioned Retlaw a couple of times, which is the company that Walt set up, which is Walter backwards.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that Walt did all the time, just like Yin Sid kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So one of the things you mentioned during your presentation was a quote that you had from the late 30s, if I remember. And I loved the story, and maybe you can walk our listeners through that.
What presentation was this, Sam?
This was at the D23 Expo. I'm sorry. When it was so what Peter had to do was share a 1 hour breakout with four museums and try to make his sound the best. And look, I'm talking to him now, and I want to get to Marceline sometime. So he did pretty darn good.
It was a fun experience. It's always nice to be invited by Disney to share our story. So, but in that presentation, it's a quote that speaks to me. So as a guy who comes from an advertising background, when I got to the museum and I read this quote, it captivated me. It was a quote given in 1938, and the quote is, "More things of importance happen to me in Marceline than have happened since or are likely to in the future," which is a powerful quote anyway. And if you think about the timing, because I tend to segment things into periods, 1938, Mickey Mouse exists and is known literally across the globe. Silly Symphonies has won Walt 2 Academy Awards at that point. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs has financed a brand new studio in Burbank. So Walt is not a Hollywood newcomer. He is, for the lack of a better term, at that point, a Hollywood mogul. Amazing things have happened to Walt Disney. And at that time, when a reporter asks him about the most important part of his life, he reverts back to Marceline. So it was the thing that motivated me when we started talking about redesigns at the museum or how we were going to expand our story. It can't be more powerful. I mean, the one person that everyone is madly, and I mean, well, I shouldn't say everyone. I'm a huge Walt fan, and you might understand this more than a lot of other people, more than a Disney company fan. Walt fascinates me as a human being, and the decisions he made, the choices, the way, even in the roughest and toughest of times in his life, he chose to document his life. Even when things are going horribly wrong, you can find photos in the Disney archive of those terrible moments in his life. But he knew that there would be value in telling those stories. He was so, he's just such a fascinating human being to me.
Very insightful.
So for him, sorry.
So very, he was very, very insightful on and documenting those things.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And so I literally love, again, in my longer presentation, I talk about a few other people that mean something to me. I talk a little bit about Jack Benny. And Jack Benny, in every radio show, he would talk about where he grew up. He would, I mean, it's fascinating to me that that he would spend so much time talking about his childhood. When you talk about Bob Hope coming from Cleveland, Bob Hope became so successful and so linked to Cleveland that he bought the Cleveland Indians. Like he was Mr. America, but he wasn't even born in America. He didn't come to America until he was 6 years old. He was born in London, but people think of him as the most American comedian of our time. And then you talk about Walt Disney. He told the world that he grew up on a farm in Missouri. Well, I only know of one farm that he grew up in Missouri. I'm not going to argue with Walt Disney about where his heart lays.
Right. So
it's undeniable he came from Chicago. Like, I mean, there are facts. And so yes. I, you know, good for Chicago and good for claiming that that's where he was born. Cause yes, he was born in Chicago, but I don't see tons and tons of quotes of Walt waxing poetically about his time in Chicago.
He was only 4 years old or 5 years
old. Yeah, left. Exactly. Although he did go back to Chicago for art training and things like that.
Yeah,
he did. So I'm sure he had a love with Chicago. It's not like he disliked Chicago.
No, but not the same way.
There's always times that you just talk about certain parts of your life. They jump to the front of your mind because they mean more than others. And so that's why I love how often you can hear a quote that mentions Marceline that came from Walt's lips.
Now, you mentioned earlier the museum is basically it's a self-guided tour. Are there guided tours available?
Funny you should mention that. So we used to be a guided tour. When I first came to the museum, it was a guided tour, and it's beautiful and it's personal. And it's the thing that made me fall in love with the greater story, because the gave me my tour. They had befriended the Disneys when they came to visit in 1956. So they were very good family friends. So to talk to her, it's kind of like when you're talking to someone who knew someone,
right.
In the hand that touched the hand, it was fascinating to talk with her about her private moments talking with Walt. That's why I fell in love with the story, and that's why I fell in love with Marceline. That's why I tell their story as much as, you know, I rely on their story to help share Walt's story so dramatically. And sheer numbers over the past 5 years have increased so much that we can't do that anymore. Mm. We can't give guided tours of the first gallery space because you'd spend most of your time waiting for the next tour, which is not exciting. So we had to transfer over to a self-guided tour, but we are in the process right now of rebuilding our website. And one of the things that you're going to be able to link on in that website, hopefully in the next few months, is the ability to book evening tours that are guided not only in the first gallery space, but through the entire museum with your choice of hosts. So either our executive director, Kay Mallins, or myself. So it's a different experience. Number one, I love being in the museum at night. It's a different feel. It's beautiful. It's nice to walk through a museum sometimes with a glass of wine in hand and go at a different pace and talk in more detail about every story in our 10,000 square feet as opposed to the front gallery. So that's something that we're in the process of trying to figure out right now, because there's nothing. I mean, it doesn't matter where you go. I could go to a you know, to McDonald's. And if someone's going to show me around personally in the kitchen, I'll sign up for that tour.
Well, and that's sure. So, you know, earlier I mentioned the Marceline Magic Kingdom tour, and you know, I've been going to Walt Disney World for a long time, and I've been going multiple times a year for probably 10 years. And about 5 years ago, one of our other co-hosts, I was down for my birthday, and I didn't know it, but they had bought me and my wife as a gift tickets to go on the Keys to the Kingdom tour in Walt Disney World. And after that, I was all about the tours. And every trip I go now, I'm looking for a different. The past trip I was on, me and one of our other co-hosts, Ed, we went on. We had a whole group of us, but we went on the World Showcase tour in Epcot, and that's, you know, just all of those tours are so fantastic to be guided. So I get that, you know, in the museum, it's self-guided because, yeah, it's too hard to do tours like that. But I'm the type of person would certainly pay for like a premium type event to have, you know, a little more personal experience and more discussion and stuff like that, you know.
Maybe there's a Disney Nerds excursion someday where we'll do something at the museum. You never know, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Anything can happen. Marceline's magical.
So speaking of something along those lines, you mentioned that you could drive to Disneyland and Disney World because you're sort of right in the middle of Disneyana, right? Right in the middle of the country. How am I getting to the museum?
I would say by far the easiest and the most frequent visitors come via Kansas City. So Kansas City obviously has a lot of Disney history that you can find on your own as well, but it's about a touch over 2 hours, probably 2 hours and 15 minutes from Kansas City. And then St. Louis is, you know, where if you drew a line between St. Louis and Kansas City, we're slightly north of that line, but we shy towards Kansas City. We're a little over 3 hours to St. Louis. So those would be the two major I'm going to fly in to discover. But Kansas City has so many Disney connections. It tends to be the one that true Disney people who are coming on a pilgrimage, they want to experience it all, so that they'll come through Kansas City.
Kansas City, and it makes sense with Lindsey Graham and all the things that happened there. Absolutely. Tell me a little bit. I know your story. You visited, then all of a sudden you're the creative director. So from your point of view, kind of how'd your journey go to end up, you know, being on a podcast talking to Disney nerds about this wonderful museum that you have there?
It is still it's still one of those pinch me things that happens to me. I'm like you. It's funny, Jimmy, you talking about going to the park. We're DVC members, so we go to Disney World two or three times a year, and that is the only destination that we go to as a family growing up. That was our go-to thing. And so that's why we were so passionate about Marceline. My son was living in Vancouver, so I'm from Toronto. I'm a Canadian. And my son was living in Vancouver on the west coast of Canada, and he had just graduated university, and he was trying to figure out what he was going to do with his life. So he applied, because doesn't everyone want to work at Disney if they had their dream job? Sure. And he applied and became a cultural ambassador at the Canadian Pavilion at Epcot for a year. And so we were driving from Vancouver across country to get him to Florida, and we were, you know, tantalizingly close to Marceline. And it was my son, Christopher.
It's a diagonal straight across there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Across the continent.
Yeah. So Chris said to me as we're driving, Dad, we have to stop in Marceline. So I was not going to argue with him, even though it was a considerable distance out of the way. But you don't argue with your son. When he's right, he's right. So I discovered the museum. And as I was working in documentary film at the time, and I reached back out to the museum and said, I would love to do something to help you tell your story, even if it's just sell in your gift shop. So we started reaching out. We started we brought a crew out and started doing some filming. And as I was spending time there, my design background got the better of me. So I started to rebrand the museum, even though I had absolutely no right to do so. I came back with some ideas on how they could better brand themselves, and found out that they were hiring a director at the time. and they had already shortlisted from, I don't know how many, 70, I think, down to 4. And they had already had their second interviews, and the board was going to select who it was going to be. And I put my hand up very last minute and said, well, I would like that to be me. So I will fly down and meet with your board and do a presentation. And did, and somehow they selected me to be the director at the museum. So it was, for a Disney fan, it's hard to explain that you suddenly live in Marceline. It was a
right
a pretty mind-boggling experience to move down to this amazing little city. To go into the museum every day and tell this story, it's crazy. It's I've had a lot of great jobs in my life, but this is by far the most passionate I've ever been about anything I've ever done.
I'm sure there were some people in Canada that you were friends with that were like, what do you mean you're moving to Marceline,
yeah,
Missouri to go work at the
Walt Disney? We get Disney it immediately.
We get it. Yeah. I mean, we get it when we tell people we do a Disney-related podcast or we're going back to Disney World for the third time this year.
Yeah. It's funny because almost everybody who I'm very close with obviously knows I'm pretty passionate about Disney anyway.
Sure.
So literally, it's one of those things that the feedback was, if I was going to design a job for you, any job in the entire world,
that would be it.
That just might be it. So how did that work?
That's pretty cool.
That's good stuff for sure.
I think it's also important to point out that though the Disney company supports you guys in your effort, they don't fund you. You're a standalone organization.
No.
You need to be able to do these things and support everything you just talked about based on admission prices and things along that line.
So I was about to ask, how does the Walt Disney Museum in Marceline, Missouri make money?
It is exactly that. It is through people coming through the door, and more as we continue to grow and change things within the museum. We had fine attendance every year, but for the first almost 15 years of our life, we had set up our museum and the museum had never changed. So it was a fun place to visit. People loved it, but there wasn't a need to go back anytime soon because they were going to see exactly what they saw the last time that they had come to visit. So the mandate that I had was we need to grow so that the people who love us and want to come back and visit have a reason to come back every single year. So every year there's a commitment to make some sort of a story change within the museum or expand on our collections. So that's what we've been doing. The bigger reason, literally the reason that our doors stay open, still lies within the Disney family. So Walt's daughter, Sharon Disney Lund Foundation, are a huge advocate, and to the point where they were physically funding the museum. I think if they had decided to not fund us, we might not exist, because it's never exciting to fund a museum to literally pay for your electrical bills sometimes. That's not a reason to fund a museum, other than they have a tremendous passion to help keep the story of the Disney family alive and well as well. But we've got to the point now, just through attendance, in the last 5 years, we've quadrupled our attendance. And so we are self-supportive through donations and through people literally coming to our door and buying stuff in our store. And now all those gifts and donations that we get from people who want our story to continue to grow, and people like the Sharon Disney Lund Foundation, it allows us to make those radical changes. Like, we'd like to build an addition to our museum. That's certainly something that we would not have discussed even 5 years ago. But now, with the sheer number of volume of people coming through our space, it needs to take place. And the Disney company, the archives are constantly doing touring displays to share archival pieces,
right,
or D23 right, pieces. We don't have a place to house that. So by building an addition that gives us potentially another 5,000 square feet of space for touring exhibits, we can participate. And so we've also talked to Disney about doing virtual displays in our museum. So the future is almost unlimited if you have the imagination to sort of dream about what could be, as opposed to get fixated on what exists and the limitations of being trapped in that. You know, you can do anything.
That sounds like a Walt quote your mind to there, it. Peter. That sounds like a Walt quote that you just sprouted off there. But
maybe. I probably inadvertently spew out a lot of Walt quotes, but yeah.
Peter, what does it cost to get into the museum?
It's $10 for adults. Children 6 to 12 are $5. Younger than 6 is free. So we're doing more and more to engage. You know, the name Walt Disney, as I often connotates family entertainment. And for the longest time, we were not necessarily family friendly. If your kids came with you, and especially if they were not of an age to read or to be engaged enough to let the parents read, it was a long slog for them to go through the museum.
Sure.
And now we have far more family friendly videos to sit and watch, and they can do a little animal hunt to look for Walt's lost farm animals as they wander through the museum. And we are trying to engage family-friendly activities now, as opposed to just being a place for Disney adult fans.
And do you guys offer, like, memberships, basically?
We do.
Would be like an annual pass. I live in New Orleans, so I'm lucky enough to live by one of the best museums in the country, maybe the world, but definitely in the country, the National World War II Museum. And I'm a member there, and it's one of the cool things, because it's like an annual pass, but I also feel like I'm helping them out too.
And that's a big thing. So a lot of people, when they ask how they can help us, you know, becoming members of the museum is an easy thing to do. Online, you can become a member. You can also buy a brick that goes in the courtyard. That's a great way to support the museum.
Very but nice. It's just, that's awesome. The courtyard right in front of the museum. I love
that. That's right. Fantastic. Yeah. That's awesome.
And that's all available online too. But I will tell you that we had someone, and I just redid their membership not that long ago. And this lady has been a member as long as I've been a part of the museum. And she lives, her name is Laura Ferrello, and she lives in Verona, Italy. And she has never been to Marceline, and she may never, ever get to the museum. But like clockwork, every year I get a membership package sent out to her in Verona. And I think she just wants to, that's her way of connecting with Disney. You know, that everyone wants, and I said this a little bit sort of inadvertently at the end of the presentation at D23, but everyone wants their connection with Walt. If you're a Disney fan, they want to somehow figure out their own personal way to connect in a way that they never thought they could, or they think others don't. And so for many, it's going to the park, or it's, you know, going to visit the partner statue every time they go. If you're lucky enough to get up to Walt's apartment when you go to California, that's a pretty sacred place to go visit. And so for a lot of people, their point of contact to people who might never ever get you know, as lucky as we are to be able to visit the parks, let alone on a pretty consistent basis, they can come to, I think, personally, obviously, the most important piece of ground there is in terms of Disney history, Marceline, and they can connect with Walt that way. So we're very lucky. We have a lot of people who really want to see Marceline continue to grow, and they are stepping up to the plate to help us do that. So we are very, very lucky.
Earlier,
add us to that list.
Yeah, and earlier you mentioned the importance, and I'm just going back to, you know, you saying connecting to Walt, and this is something that me and Sam share. And earlier you talked about, you know, getting to talk to somebody who actually talked to Walt.
Yeah.
A few years ago, me and Sam on the podcast got to interview Jeffrey Sherman, son of Bob Sherman of the Sherman Brothers. And he got to tell us stories about growing up in California and getting to meet Walt as a child, and Walt grabbing him by the hand and showing him stuff on the set of Mary Poppins, and it was it was so surreal to me to be like one degree to Walt, you know. So to talk to somebody who actually, so me and Sam actually did that interview together too. So it's something we share together, and that it's amazing. It was so profound to me that I'm talking to someone who actually, his dad worked. Well, first of all, he was the son of a Sherman brother, which is amazing in its own right, but also
sure,
that,
yeah,
yes, but also that, you know, that he knew Walt personally as a child.
It's amazing stuff.
It's important also to remember, because it sounds funny to say, but for a lot of people, they don't necessarily think of Walt as a person. It's a brand name, and it's a company, and the younger kids now don't necessarily picture or relate that name back to a human being. And so it seems so obvious to us, but it's not to everyone.
Sure. It's true. And you are doing a fantastic job, Peter, of helping to make that connection. And every family that comes through with a couple of kids that learn something, that just hopefully it's that spark, and Marceline can provide it. And we thank you for your time this evening.
Peter,
we know time is valuable.
If someone
appreciate it.
If someone wanted to become a member or purchase a brick in the courtyard, or how would they, or just get more information, where would they go?
Yeah, so they should go to our museum website, waltdisneymuseum.org. Again, that's just in the process of being redesigned, but that's probably the easiest place to go. For kind of information, Facebook is so quick and so immediate. We spend a lot of time sharing stories on Facebook and museum updates on Facebook. So follow us on Facebook for sure. But yeah, the museum website, if you really want to support and help, you know, be part of that story, you can do that. We have our Dreaming Tree Gala that we do every 2 years, and it alternates between Marceline and Walt Disney World. So last year it was at Epcot, of all places. We had it in the American Pavilion at Epcot in the Rotunda, which was absolutely amazing. And then this year's back in Marceline on the Disney Family Farm. So you can buy tickets even for that. That's a great way to support us as well, because that's just a fun evening. So that's all available on our website. So if you go visit us there, it'll send you in a bunch of different directions. I think you'll learn a lot just by reading some of the articles on the website.
I am looking forward to the shop and seeing what type of merchandise you have there soon.
And Peter, if I want to stay, if I want to visit Marceline and stay, Airbnb is probably the way to go.
Well, it's a lovely way to go, because there's some really fantastic places. It's, you know, Airbnb can be kind of hit and miss. I will tell you, someone who I almost can't believe that I get to say is my friend now, but Floyd Norman, he's been to Marceline a couple times. And the last time he got to pick wherever he wanted to stay, and he picked an Airbnb in the community. And he said to me, whenever I come back to Marceline, that is the only place I want to stay. So there's some really lovely homes that people have brought back to life or built new just to house people who want to share that story. And if you want to stay at a traditional branded hotel, there's that within a 10-mile drive. So there's a little bit of everything for everybody.
Yeah, it looks like there's a list of accommodations on the website. And Floyd Norman, by the way, just dropping the name of a Disney legend as a friend.
Dropped Floyd Norman's name.
No,
it was nothing. You know, that guy, Floyd Norman.
it's such a geeky, again, Disney story. Because the very first time I ever went, when I started working at the museum, the very first D23 event I went to, I was incredibly nervous because I wasn't sure if I knew enough about our story. And we were setting up our booth the day before, or I guess it was the morning of the first day of the D23 event. So this would have been, I guess, almost 5 years ago. And of all people, who walks by is Floyd Norman. So I immediately identify him and get very nervous. And he stops and says, "Oh, Marceline, tell me a little bit about Marceline." And he's surrounded by people who want him to go somewhere else. And he's like, nope, I want to just hear about Marceline. And we sat and we chatted for 5 minutes and I took my picture and I sent a text to my kid right away. And I said, I just met Floyd Norman. That is the craziest thing. What is my job? I don't understand my job. Yeah. So, I was in California for meetings with Disney 2 weeks ago and we got together for lunch. So it is one of those weird things that happen, you know, I don't know. I still don't quite understand how this is all happening to me, but it's good. I'm also glad it is.
No, it's good stuff. And then I think me and Sam feel the same way. Sometimes the people get to interview and the people we get to meet, by doing this podcast, which is, you know, just something we started cool. 6 years
and
ago.
We'll add you to that list, Peter, and we will make sure the people mention the Disney Nerds podcast when they come up to see you.
Absolutely.
We hope that's the case, and that's why you're here. So with that,
thanks for talking.
Thank you. And you know, unscripted, this was just, hey, tell us about the museum. I had a couple of things I wanted to talk about. I think we covered it all. But I think most important, you get to go into the barn and sign your name. That is so cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. Thank you so much. And thank you guys for listening to the Disney Nerds podcast. For Peter, thank you once again. For Jimmy. Jimmy, you have the list of all the good stuff and places we can go.
You can email us at questions@thedisneynerdspodcast.com and email us individually at ed@thedisneynerdspodcast.com, jimmy@thedisneynerdspodcast.com, etc. You can send us a message on Facebook to the page, The Disney Nerds Podcast. Join our group, Disney Nerds. Instagram @thedisneynerdspodcast and Twitter @thedisneynerds. Make sure to check out the website, www.thedisneynerdspodcast.com, and watch the live stream every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock Walt Disney World time.
I hope that when people do come and hear the podcast and come to Marceline, that they most certainly tell me where they heard it from, because maybe I'll have some time to take you around the museum and show you some things that not everyone gets to see. So yeah,
there you go. That's
you're in the inside loop.
Inside loop, all of you listeners. Thank you so much. We'll see you
good
next
stuff.
Time.
Guaharini.
Kongaloosh.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace, the haunting's free. So hurry back.